As the summer sizzle fades, it's time to establish a wellness routine that's here to stay. Ritual is shaking up the supplement industry with their focus on traceable science and high-quality ingredients. They've got every base covered, from their clinically backed women's 18-plus multivitamin to their stress relief and sleep melatonin, both using first-of-its-kind BioSeries technology designed to optimize formula delivery. For a limited time, get up to 40% off your first month at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. And now I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun, Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino-style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We have the pleasure today of talking about the defense from that big Ravens win over the Steelers on Saturday. I have to check myself on the day here. To do that with me is Jordan Coe. Jordan, how are you doing?
Good, Ken. Thanks for having me on.
Always my pleasure to talk football with you, Jordan. Great win for the Ravens. The home playoff game hopes are still alive. They secured their playoff spot in this one, obviously. Their probability to win the AFC North is back over 50%, as I calculated anyway. Where do we go from here?
I mean, best win of the year, I'd say, in my books. So, you know,
Buffalo,
where
maybe?
We go from... Maybe. Actually, yes. So Buffalo, definitely, probably. But, you know, in terms of monkey off the back, like getting over the hump, all of like whatever luck factors you want to throw into these situations, like it felt like the Ravens in big games over the last big chunk of time, let's say the last 3 years or since 2019, quite frankly, right? In these big games, the Ravens have fought against a very Murphy's Law like wall where when things needed to go correctly for the Ravens, they always went the wrong way. That it just never felt like the breaks were there in the big moments when like easy things should have happened in a positive way for the Ravens. Those didn't happen. This game wasn't like all the things went right, but finally it felt like you felt some of those. It was more 50-50 to some degree, and maybe even a little more 60-65-35. But it wasn't unequivocal. And the Ravens have played some games. I mean, you go back to the 2019 playoff game, and that was a game where everything that could have gone wrong went wrong.
Yep.
In almost every single instance. And so this finally felt like a game where that wasn't the case. And in a big moment, in a big, all of the things that kind of like wrap around that. And as a Ravens fan, there's something to that. It feels, I don't know. I feel like, obviously I've got the purple colored glasses on all the time. But I think there are fans that don't always feel that way, that feel like there might be something to this season that they didn't think was there before this game. And that's an exciting, like kind of step of momentum for this Ravens team. It feels like.
All right. Well, fair enough. I mean, I kind of look at the 23 season as a season where they had their way with the good teams. Now, they lost two games to the Steelers, who are a okay team, but they weren't a great team. And they did beat the five teams who were on their schedule, who were what, three games over 500 at the time. They destroyed them. You know, they took care of Detroit in a way that Detroit went back home with their tails between their legs, and they destroyed Seattle in the breakout game for Keaton Mitchell, right? And they took care of the 49ers in a way the 49ers have not been taken care of in recent years when they've been healthy. So I destroyed Miami 56-19. I mean, we could go on, but they set the all-time record for wins against teams who had a winning record last year. I think the point I'm making about this is, while I appreciate what you're saying about Murphy's Law seeming to affect the Ravens in every big game, I think we have a selective memory as a total fan base in overlooking how great that 23 season was, for example, in winning every game effectively that was a really tough contest for them all the way up to the AFC Championship.
Minus, I agree with everything you just said, Ken, and I think that the whatever you want to call this, whether I'll call it voodoo since we need to get to New Orleans, in particular, feels like it's coming from Pittsburgh and Kansas City exclusively. Okay. So everybody else can live in another bucket. But when it comes to the Steelers, 8 of the last 9 coming into this game, and yep, granted, 2 of those games the Ravens didn't compete in, so like those don't count. But 8 of the last 9 against them, every close game against Kansas City, weird things happen. The Zay Flowers fumble, the like non-call pass interference call that should have been on Isaiah Likely, like in the playoff game as well. Like just like these big things that felt like in those moments they would have gone wrong. The fumbles in this game did not go to the Steelers, right? And even in the last Steelers game, the interceptions where literally just having balls ripped out of players' hands in uncanny
every break
ways
went their way in the last
and not just like breaks went their way, right? Like, and it's almost like the Likely, like when Likely caught that touchdown, or we thought was a touchdown of the Kansas City game, it didn't even, until they showed that replay, it seemed like he was in. Like there wasn't even like a question initially from the announcers. It was like, they're going for 2. We're dialed up. We're going there. And then all of a sudden there was like, wait a second, hold on. Something else is happening here that none of us even knew was happening. Right. Those moments did not seem to surface in this game in some way. And I don't know, you know, again, that some of that could just be luck and it's variance and it's whatever you want to chalk it up to be. But if that helps the Ravens be in a different mindset, and whether you want to call it manifesting, whatever that is, in these moments, if they have to play against Pittsburgh again in the playoffs, and they have to play against Kansas City, I'm not worried about Buffalo in the playoffs. You know, if we want to talk about the biggest win, you know, obviously I think the biggest win the Ravens have this year is Buffalo. They dismantled them at home without question. Lamar didn't even play in the fourth quarter of that game. But if it's Kansas City or it's Pittsburgh in the playoffs, I think the Ravens would feel differently about whatever that is or whatever that might look like. And hopefully this game might make that not be the same. And that could be really significant against a Kansas City team that, quite frankly, looks a lot better with Marquise Brown coming back, and kind of like they looked a lot better against Houston, I think, this week.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're a legitimately good football team, but you know, they didn't destroy the Texans in that game. They played them well, and they, you know, they won the football game, but you know, it's just not Kansas City's manner this year in this kind of a faux 15-1 season, which feels a lot less legitimate than, say, the 98 Vikings 15-1 season, or a lot of the other teams that failed after going 15-1 and were out in one round, were out in the second round, either one. It doesn't really, they don't feel any as legitimate as those other 15-1 teams. So I think there is an element of fraud, a huge element of fraud associated with the Steelers, paper thin in terms of who they have talent wise going around that roster. The one position where they actually had a little bit of depth is really a quarterback, where I thought that, you know, you had a couple different ways to win with the quarterbacks they had. It does now look like Tomlin made the right choice moving to Wilson from Fields. But still, that's a pretty good backup quarterback they have.
Yeah. And Wilson seems like he's got a little juice left. I know that's not, you know, what we're talking about here, but I think a team with better weapons, I mean, and let's be honest, really limited Steelers team from a weapons mm-hmm. perspective on offense right now. Russell Wilson made some nice throws, showed some decent awareness. Their offensive line is not great. I mean, he's not working with very much. He's not working with very much at all over there. And showed to be pretty competent as a quarterback in this game. And so, you know, obviously Pickens being out is huge, but they have a lot more holes than that. And paper thin, I think, is the way to describe it.
The Ravens did a good job of collecting the bouncing balls in this game. And it obviously wasn't an issue, but just to run through those really quickly, it wasn't as one-sided as some people are making it out to be, because they want to focus on certain types of balls that were available and not all of them. So each team had one incredibly similar interception on almost exactly the same route, frankly. Well, actually, it's not true, because Bateman kind of stopped on his route and is more in the middle of the field, but the other one is undercut, almost the same position on the field, where the interceptor, Humphrey or Minka, was starting, and Humphrey made a lot out of his. You know, his undercut was a little closer to the line of scrimmage, was able to take it back for 6, and Minka had a decent return on his, but the Ravens were guarding all the exits very quickly. And in fact, I looked at how Derrick Henry played defense on that play, looked really good, even though Henry didn't make the tackle, but he knew exactly how to angle.
Can he play
back.
Weak side linebacker?
Yeah, there you go. He's the right size for it. You need a thumping mic. Yeah. But let's go through some of those bouncing footballs on Sunday, because that's the major Steelers complaint, is that the Ravens recovered every fumble and blah, 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 blah. The first one was the strip of Jackson by Highsmith for that 10-yard sack. That's it. That's a very fortunate one for the Ravens to recover. Those often go to the defense by type of fumble. So that was a good one. And then Desmond King had two fumbles on punts, and both of those were recovered by the Ravens by two different linebackers playing on special teams, Chris Board and Christian Welch. Ravens are a little bit lucky. The game is out of reach at one point for the second one. The first one, game is just starting. You know, basically it set up the Ravens' first touchdown that they recovered that fumble. So it was important. Then it got moved forward a little bit, and the Steelers are threatening to take the lead for the first time with the game tied at 7. Wilson decides he wants to try and run over Ardarius Washington, which is actually funny now that we're thinking about it here. Ardarius Washington gives him one of the great midsection hits of all time to dislodge that football. Van Noy jumps right on it, but there were about 5 Ravens around. The Ravens were going to get that ball if Wilson himself didn't recover it. A turning point in the game?
I think so. I mean, you know what?
Than Humphrey or not?
No, the Humphrey play was more significant. Well, I don't know. Like, if we're talking about, like, the Humphrey play ended the game. So in that sense, there could be no bigger play, right? The Ravens' offense was humming when Ardarius forced that fumble. And the Ravens' defense was, they hadn't quite figured out, and I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but they hadn't quite decided what they wanted to do up to that point, I think, in terms of approach. And so that play changed, I think, maybe a drive or two later, changed the Ravens' approach to what they were doing on defense, which ultimately resulted in changing the game, which was a big part of how they got the interception. Humphrey got his interception, right? So those changes that they made because of the Washington play did lead to kind of that momentum. But I think that the Ravens' offense was going to put up a pretty decent game there anyway, or at least felt like, even before that, felt like they were even more ahead of where they ended up being at that point. And I think if Wilson scored, we might have seen even more aggression and more better performance from the Ravens offense out of necessity than anything else.
Oh, so they might have scored more than 34, but won, say, 38-24 or something.
Or scored 34 without a defensive touchdown later, or whatever that looked like. Yeah. But have had to turn up the heat some in that sense, because they had no choice.
Yeah.
So this is what's so fascinating about kind of like EPA and some of these things that factor, like, oh, this one play affected this game in this way. Well, yeah, but like those plays affect all kinds of different things that are also potentially more difficult to like factor into these things. So they were both really significant plays, and it was a great play by Ardarius Washington, and it was a silly decision by Russell Wilson to not just go down in that circumstance. I don't think that he tried to run him over. I don't think he saw him coming. And I think that's also why the fumble happened, because he wasn't ready to cover up. He wasn't ready to take the hit. He wasn't even trying to kind of initiate contact with Washington. He was just, I think he thought he was home free, and Washington licked him.
Washington didn't come from a funny angle off the goal line. He's right in the clear path of view. So I have a little, I don't know.
I thought he was being blocked. I think that Wilson thought he was blocked and sustained and clear of him, and he didn't need to worry about it. Cause I think it was it a tight end? I mean, it probably was, cause I think the Steelers played like one wide receiver all game, but there was a big guy that Washington shed to get off the block. And then all of a sudden, that's when he kind of had that free lane. So my perception wasn't that he didn't see him. Like, he didn't see him coming because out of nowhere or weird angle, that he just thought he was occupied and thought he was home free.
All right. Well, it certainly could have been. And I think there was still time to decide to slide by the time he knew he was not free, but in any case, it would
agree with that for sure. Yeah.
Let's go through the rest of these plays, because there's a couple more that are important to recognize. And this is the big one, is Wilson and his throw to Patterson for the touchdown. So it's in the left side of the end zone. Terrible matchup for the Ravens. You know, have Malik Harrison on him. Ball's thrown up. It's actually underthrown slightly in terms of being too close to Harrison. Harrison goes up to the catch point, which was good. I mean, I'm not sure Stevens could have done the same thing in terms of getting up to the ball. He has his hand in between the point, what I call the Bolden point, because Bolden would just rip your arm off if it was in there, and it, he wouldn't bother with it. If you'd take your hand out, it'd get ripped off. And but in that particular case, he kind of disrupted the ability of Patterson to make the catch when he fell on the ground. The ball was loose on his stomach to be intercepted. And he made a play for it, he just couldn't come up with it. It was a 50-50 ball if ever there was one. And if Steelers fans are really going to say, no, wait a minute, that's a protected class, that wasn't part of the loose footballs arrangement, they're just kidding themselves. That was an enormous loose football one for an immediate touchdown for the Steelers. And it would have been, you know, reversed to an interception had it been taken away.
Yeah, I know we've got this in the script later. Let's talk about this play for a second. I mean, the only reason that Malik Harrison was even in the vicinity of that throw was because it was a terrible throw. Yeah. Russell Wilson underthrew the ball by almost 4 yards. Patterson, and that's the only reason that Harrison was kind of close to it. He wasn't and Gabe and I watched the game together and we were arguing about this. And Gabe was like, oh, it was a contested catch. And I was like, in the sense that Harrison was in the area, it was contested. Yeah. But like, he was not meaningfully contesting the ball. He didn't know where it was. He kind of just threw his hand up. So his hand was there because he threw his hand up. But Patterson was also jumping for a ball that was like, when you see it, it looks closer than it was. But where Patterson actually makes contact with the ball, it was much, much more farther away from where Harrison
leaning forward towards the field of play, right when he was at the goal line.
At the initial like high point of the catch point, Harrison had no chance on that. Patterson should have secured that ball. And then he was so wildly unaware of what was happening because he dove blindly, essentially. He essentially interfered with Patterson, quite frankly, on the play to get into position to contest it. He was so out of control at that point that he had no idea that the ball is literally rolling around on Patterson's stomach for a second and a half. And by the time he realized that Patterson had covered it up, yeah. I'm just going to get into this now. I have huge problems with Malik Harrison ever being put in a position where he's in a pass defense module in any circumstance, and that he needs to not be on the field if that can happen to him. No matter what, I don't care what the situation is. The best situation is 3rd and 1 or 4th and 1 or shorter. And that's the only time I want to see him at off-ball linebacker.
His two positions are weak side linebacker next to Roquan when he does have definitively some pass responsibilities. In fact, the Steelers obviously isolated him.
Everybody does.
Yeah. but the second position he plays is Sam linebacker. And if you don't think Sam linebacker has significant coverage responsibilities, just look at his percentage of coverage snaps last year when that's all he really played.
Well, and then leave him in a Sam and like take that responsibility away from him, right? Like you can do that too, right?
Him a rush linebacker playing Sam linebacker, playing on that side.
Correct. So you can do things where you're not going to leave him to be your coverage linebacker. But if those are the circumstances, in my opinion, and the Ravens also, and we can talk about, I'm sure we'll talk about this several times. The biggest hole, the Ravens miss Patrick Queen badly. The biggest hole in this defense is weak side linebacker. And there is no quality pass defensive awareness from the inside linebacker position at anybody the Ravens have tried there. And that could be include Brandon Stevens.
But it can't, the guy who can't include, who it would normally include on all the high leverage downs is Kyle Hamilton.
Right. And if you want to bring him down into those circumstances and you want to give him that role, that's obviously, I would feel differently about that. But right. Chris Board, Malik Harrison, Brandon Stevens, not the answer. And my biggest fear about this Ravens team is one of those guys or a combination of those guys. And we can include Trenton Simpson in this group as well. A combination of those guys will be abused by the better offensive coordinators in a playoff game where you have to win. So you will spam the same play against the same and attack the same spot and the same player within a defense over and over and over again, because it's the end of the season and there's nothing to leave on tape and there's nothing else to worry about. And you're not trying to set anything else up.
This is, by the way, a position where you can go to the street and get somebody who's a decent coverage weak side linebacker or a safety for that matter.
Or Kristen Welch. I mean, try somebody else.
He's not the answer. I mean, really, he's not the answer. But
fair. I'm just throwing a name out.
Yeah, I got you. But there are safeties who they could find to play dime. I mean, that's literally it's the least specific size and shape pool you can imagine. There's an enormous people enormous group of people who played safety and could, you know, bring portable back end skills to understand route concepts behind them into that weak side linebacker dime role and play it well enough at the NFL level. I mean, that pool is very large. The problem is you can't get ball hawks. You can't get your back end safeties, and they're not a dime a dozen. There are some, and you can give people tries, but you use up currency every time you do this. They can bring in someone, replace Kane or Braid right away, and you know those guys have played hard. They might even get taken, but they might also make it through the practice squad, and you have another chance to elevate them later. But if you really need a coverage linebacker for high leverage downs, they are out there. They can find them.
And this is my other thought, Ken, you know, especially as we heard the announcers talking about how their interviews with Roquan said that things have gotten better partially because he's had to do less pre-snap work. So the communication of what is happening pre-snap can happen faster. It was clear that Marcus Williams couldn't fill that role, and that with Kyle Hamilton playing closer to the line of scrimmage, he wasn't able to do that. There's a question in my mind now that if Hamilton is that guy and he's directing traffic, even if he's deep, and he's deep with Marcus Williams, and our Darius Washington is the guy that comes down in and plays into that dime spot. But Hamilton keeps the communication role of what's happening in the back end. And Hamilton's the guy telling Marcus Williams what to do. And Marcus Williams is okay with that. We haven't seen a fundamental physical drop off from Marcus Williams. It seemed very much didn't understand, wasn't in the right place. Other people weren't in the right places. That seemed to be the problem. Do we have to try something like that? Because Ardarius Washington could very much fill that role. And Cordell Patterson is not catching a pass over Ardarius Washington in that same instance.
Well, there's a big height difference there. That
even still, I mean, Ardarius still gets it done against guys that have been much taller than him all year. And he's done it his whole career.
He's done a really good job tackling such people, and they do sometimes have him covering a tight end like that. I'm not as sanguine about that as you are. And it's okay. We don't have to spend the whole show on that. Let's finish up the topic here.
Move on.
We'll get back to some good things. Hamilton tackled Warren at the 45-yard line. Warren turning around upfield, ball pops up, then it pops all the way down to the ground where Warren recovers it. They call it a catch and not an incomplete pass. But that was another ball that obviously didn't go the Ravens way. It's not like the Ravens got every bounce. And here's the key thing. It's not like it decided the outcome. I don't believe that, not even for a freaking second. The Ravens won this game by 17 points. You want to be revisionist about what happened? Okay, talk about all these elements. Talk about how the score might have been different. I think it impacted the score, the final score probably in some way. But if you look back at the Steelers' two-point win in Pittsburgh, I mean, that was completely, you know, 8 out of 9 field goal results going in the Steelers' direction. It was them making 6 out of 6 and Tucker missing 2 out of 3. It was the three plays going against them on the turnovers. I mean, it was the bouncing balls went the Steelers' way in that game. And that definitely decided the outcome there. Here, I don't think it decided the outcome at all.
Totally agree.
All right. So let's move on here a little bit. So let's talk a little bit about the playoff situation currently, because this is an interesting thing that came up. And a listener actually somebody on Twitter suggested this, is that one of the things the Ravens really want as a potential number 4 seed, and I think it applies if they're the number 5 too, by the way, I don't think it matters what, is a strong number 7 seed in the playoffs. So the team that kind of meets that characteristic, I don't think it's Denver, and I don't think it's San Diego. I think the team that could meet it is Cincinnati. So the question is, should the Ravens really be at all hesitant to have Cincinnati in the playoffs? And I think a lot of it, you know, goes back to the fact that, oh, they've had 2 1-point victories over that, or maybe one was 1 and 1 is 3. I kind of forgotten at this point. Yeah, 3-1, right? 41-38.
3-1.
Yeah. So they've had 2 close victories over there, and then they'd have to beat them a third time. And, you know, they've shown that all this weakness against Jamar Chase. Frankly, I tossed that out the window. That's old safety crapola for starters. and the second part is they wouldn't even play him till the AFC championship. So are we really concerned about playing the Bengals at home as opposed to at Buffalo or at Kansas City?
Correct.
It's ridiculous.
I think you can throw out any argument of, like, insert any team that would be the seven seed as a concern. Yep. I would take the Ravens, even if it were Buffalo or Kansas City, right? Like in any of those circumstances, being able to take the home game in that situation will always be like the reseeding. And I think some people forget about this, with the what that they reseed within the context of the playoffs, right? So like the Ravens would then by virtue of that, have that home game opportunity that trumps literally everything, right? In all these circumstances. So you want Cincinnati to have a shot to play for the playoffs, not only because you might feel strongly about their ability to beat Kansas City or Buffalo or both, but also because of the Ravens' ability to get a home game and to win the division. That Cincinnati's investment in week 18 is just as valuable as Cincinnati being in the playoffs, even if whatever iteration that you might want to take that. Now, hopefully it's not relevant, it's not relevant completely by the time they get there, but hey, who knows what's going to happen? Baltimore winning against Houston, Pittsburgh losing against Kansas City, Baltimore losing against Cleveland, and Pittsburgh losing against Cincinnati still gives Baltimore the division. So even in that instance, like you want to be rooting for air quotes Cincinnati to continue to win games.
Yeah, the other possibility is they could easily lose this game at Houston, and Pittsburgh could win against the Chiefs, go a game up again, and then the Bengals can still bail the Ravens out in week 18 they beat the Steelers
I think the Ravens are going to beat the pants off. I don't understand this 3.5 point line in Houston, but especially in a dome in December, I don't see it, but regardless of that, the other thing I would say is I think Denver potentially is more of a threat to Buffalo and Kansas City than Cincinnati is, because they actually have a good defense and they actually have like a cornerback one that can shut down Pickens in an example, like against a Pittsburgh team, they could take away DeAndre Hopkins from Kansas City. They can take away Shakir from Buffalo. You start to do that, they've got a good pass rush. They've got a solid run defense. Look at what happened to Buffalo this week at home against New England, right? They are not this everyone's like, oh my gosh, Josh Allen is going to win the MVP because he beat the B team of the Detroit Lions defense and scored six touchdowns against them. And it's like, okay, fine. But that team obviously seriously banged up, not going to be able to give a quality defensive performance. I think Denver is the much bigger, Denver's the team I would like to see in that seven seed as a team that could meaningfully upset Buffalo and Kansas City. We almost already saw Denver beat Kansas City.
That's
the only reason they didn't was the missed field goal. And I do think they match up really well against Buffalo in particular. So I also, yes, I'm rooting for Cincinnati for a lot of Baltimore related reasons, but I also think that there's an iteration where Denver looks like a really good seven seed in a world of which the Ravens are a 3, 4, or 5 seed.
Well, very, very high probability to be one of those two teams. So I think the Chargers, the Chargers have the head-to-head over Denver. So if they finish with the same record, so we're looking at a likely that Denver would be the seventh seed and not the Chargers. All right. That covers a lot of that motivation we talked about. Missed tackles were a big story in this game. And these are two very good tackling teams, by the way. PFF grades on both these teams in terms of tackling have dropped dramatically over the last few weeks. But these are two of the better tackling teams in the National Football League, despite Patrick Queen. I think a very big factor for the Steelers in this game was Deshaun Elliott not being present. He had 28 stops and 2 missed tackles this year. He's just a very significant player for the Steelers. Patrick Queen, on the other hand, is the guy who Deshaun Elliott cleans up for. And he showed it again kind of in this game with a couple of missed tackles, including one early on where Henry kind of stiff-armed him over a course of several yards moving to the outside before he got a few yards more upfield. Tough game for Patrick Queen against the Ravens.
Well, and a tough game for, in fairness to the tacklers in this game, the number of touches that went to Henry, Warren, and Najee Harris, who are all very good running backs with the ball in their hand, and the Ravens don't play a cutback run game in the way that the Pittsburgh did, but Pittsburgh was cutting everything back hard. And when the lanes are there to cut back like that, which they were, because the Ravens play a little bit aggressive when they're in those situations, it's a lot easier to break tackles. So I would say that there's some virtue of just kind of like the style of the way the game went that was going to lead to more missed tackles. I would also say that it wasn't an overwhelmingly it's certainly on the Baltimore Ravens kind of side of where all this came down. It wasn't, I mean, still less than 5 yards a carry. If you take Wilson yep. out of that factor and his 30 yards, still positive numbers for how you feel about where that came down, even with the missed tackles. Inversely, yeah, the opposite for Pittsburgh.
yes. And I would certainly agree with that, that the both of these teams have the propensity to force a ton of missed tackles, both the runners and the receivers for that matter. I mean, the receivers are in some cases jukey, in other cases large. The Ravens have their tight ends who break some tackles, and that's what the Steelers have too with Washington and Freiermuth. I mean, big guys who tend to have a good chance to break tackles. And Ravens came out in a better way in that missed tackle exchange in this game. And it was a big part of the Steelers not being able to control the run game, where I think the Ravens, while they certainly didn't have a great game defending against the run, were not terrible against it either. Bill Vinovich's crew. Now, this was a oasis in the desert of some hyper-officiated games for this year. Obviously, the Ravens have not benefited when officials are more officious this year. The more penalties that are called has meant more flags. So the Ravens, this is a game, Ravens did not have a defensive foul the whole game. And finally, a game where they got a crew that seems to work in their favor.
Yeah, feels nice. I think some of it also has to do with the fact that the Steelers didn't have exceptional route runners.
Right.
It's a lot easier when really there's a really only one, Austin being the only meaningful downfield receiver that you have to really worry about interfering with. There were a lot of junk tight ends on the field a lot of the game for the Steelers, and so you don't have to be as grabby, and you don't have to be as desperate, and you don't have to worry about it as much. And even when they were kind of getting burned from time to time on defense, a lot of it was Wilson kind of making things happen after the play in that regard. And so like, there are fewer penalties that are going to come in those moments as well, right? Illegal contact goes out the door, yada, yada, yada. And so in those, if that's how you're looking at that circumstance, it's a little bit of a mix between the crew itself and the game flow saying there
and the opponent
just yeah. probably weren't going to be a lot of secondary penalties on that.
Yeah. Valid point. And that is what it takes a lot of times to get high numbers of penalties is good receivers with good jukes at the top of the stem who then force a grab after that opponent makes a bad mistake. I completely agree with that. I'm trying to think, who was the team they had all the penalties against? They had five penalties in the secondaries against. It wasn't the Giants, right?
They were really bad in the secondary against the Giants. It might have been someone else too, but the Giants were the ones where they gave up basically both the touchdown drives, and the Giants games were penalty alleviated.
Yeah, you're right. They were penalty aided. That was the game. So they had a lot against the Giants, and the Giants have Malik Nabers, so he's good in that regard.
As the summer sizzle fades, it's time to establish a wellness routine that's here to stay. Ritual is shaking up the supplement industry with their focus on traceable science and high-quality ingredients. They've got every base covered, from their clinically backed women's 18-plus multivitamin to their stress relief and sleep melatonin, both using first-of-its-kind BioSeries technology designed to optimize formula delivery. For a limited time, get up to 40% off your first month at ritual.com/podcast.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Guard. And he's also a flopper. By the way, I felt like they should have yellow carded him or red carded him by the time that game was over in terms of the flop penalties, but whatever. Okay. It wasn't really good. It was another top shelf performance by secondary. We're going to get into this. When I say top shelf, it was upper end of middle. Okay. And the Ravens haven't had a bad game in the secondary now in these last 5 weeks. So it's really been special that they've done this. And we'll get to this a little bit. I have some detail on how basically they outperformed Wilson's opportunity set yet again. And I thought that was one of the keys to the Ravens winning this. But I guess I'll just ask it as a question now to you. Do you think the Ravens have a top 10 defense now?
It's hard to say that they don't. If you look at the last five, six games in aggregate, right? Just looking at the total numbers, right? 17, 14, 24 against a good Eagles team, 23, 18 are like the points allowed in those handful of games. I mean, if you're going to give me a sub 20 point average for what the Ravens defense is going to show up and do, I'm going to be pretty happy overall. And that's with 1, 2, 3, 4 playoff teams in that mix of those five games. It's hard not to say that they're certainly top half at that point. And you can make the argument that the difference between being the middle of the road and being the 10th are not that far off in the NFL.
Right. And I think I basically would say that. I think, a lot of things have come back together for the Ravens. It's not just any one thing. It's kind of like Roquan Smith arriving, fixed everything. Well, Kyle Hamilton going to free safety did fix a lot of things about that secondary because there's a big addition by subtraction component that went with it. Getting rid of Eddie Jackson was a huge move. Ardarius Washington is move number two. He's the Tyus Bowser to Roquan Smith 2022. But if you want to pick another thing, it's the Ravens also all of a sudden got all healthy on the defensive line.
Yeah.
And they're able to push some people around there. And while they're not healthy entirely at outside linebacker, they're in as reasonably good a shape as this particular team can be, largely because their pass rush is driven from the interior. I think that's worked out well.
Yeah, Michael Pierce has been really nice in his return. And has done everything that you would expect that to do downstream. Not to be undercredited during kind of like part of that bad stretch, Brent Urban was out for some of those games as well. I mean, they were just really lacking in terms of like depth on the defensive line and the things that were happening from that. And I thought the run fits in the second half, even on the defensive line, in the second half of this game got much improved. That is where they really cleaned things up in the second half.
I don't know if you happen to see the tweet I put out about, but Brent Urban played 7 snaps against the, did you see it?
I didn't see that. No.
He played 7 snaps against the Steelers and the Steelers gained -2 yards on the 7 plays. So he was in there for the sack, 1 incomplete, and then 5 rushes for 8 yards. And that's where Urban really excels, is in denying space in the run game and giving you something. So, yes, their base package was successful, but yes, their base package was successful in part because Brent Urban was out there as part of it on a lot of those plays. They actually played more base than just with him, but really loving how the defensive line is fitting together. The other thing that I think is kind of lost in some of this about Pierce's return is not only does Pierce take over at nose tackle again on early downs, but that means somebody else doesn't have to do a job that's not just right for them. Specifically, Broderick Washington can return to playing 3 and 5 instead of, filling in as the nose where he's kind of a square peg round hole situation. And you don't get the best version of Broderick Washington out of that.
Totally, totally agree with all that. And, the one interesting thing to me about this game, and I'm very glad that the Ravens won for both fandom reasons and personal reasons.
Right.
Is that if they had lost this game, there's like an interesting dynamic to me that week 18 then became somewhat irrelevant to the equation for them. And the Ravens could have at least stayed healthy or gotten healthier if they needed to within that week as needed. I think the Ravens have played a lot better since the bye because Lamar is throwing the ball a lot better than he was the 3 weeks before the bye. And you can say whatever you want about the games that Lamar missed the practices that Lamar missed and kind of what they were saying, knee, back, they were being super vague about whatever that was. Mm-hmm. But the balls are not sailing on him like they were in the 3 weeks prior to this. He probably missed 15 throws over those 3 games high in a bunch of different types of circumstances. And I don't think in the last 2 weeks he's thrown a single ball high, like missed high in the same, like in kind of like floated it over the guy's head kind of way. And so to me, like even the Mark Andrews, like the Mark Andrews not quite touchdown in the end zone that Andrews like basically Andrews thought it was going to be higher and deeper than it was and jumped too soon. Otherwise it would have been a touchdown in his hands over Queen easily, but he just kind of like, he jumped and he didn't need to jump. Essentially, he could have just kept running and it would have been an easy touchdown. And I think that was what was happening to Lamar. A lot of those balls were high. They were sailing a little bit on him. That seems to have gone away. To me, that's the thing that matters the most. Lamar running the ball and being effective as a runner. Pittsburgh did not take him seriously in the first game that they played as a runner. In this game, they took him very seriously as a runner. And they Derrick did, Henry
to their own peril. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, they Pittsburgh is one of the teams that's really known for chasing the quarterback on option plays, or having at least one guy to do it.
Being committed to it. Yeah.
Constantly doing that. They had, you know, it wasn't always. An edge guy either, like Montrevious Adams was chasing him down, and you know, it's all kinds of different players, but Highsmith and Watt were both committed to it, and it was very strange, and they certainly made him pay. I want to talk about Deontay Johnson and the timing of his release more than anything. Now, obviously, the Steelers have no interest in either having Deontay Johnson back or even talking about Deontay Johnson, which is, I think, where the Ravens are right now as well. But Johnson, there has been speculation that the Ravens wanted to release Johnson for the prospect of helping the Chiefs to beat the Steelers this next week, which I think is actually pretty spurious. But the selection process will occur on Monday. So the earliest he would even show up, wherever he's going to be. And reportedly, there's all this interest in the waiver claim for Deontay Johnson, reportedly. Okay, have a hard time believing it, but somebody supposedly is going to take him. But is he going to affect this week's game in any way? A game on Thursday, a game on Wednesday? Forget that, because the earliest you can get there is Tuesday.
I had not heard said conspiracy theory and think that there's a lot of hooey involved in that. I mean, I think at the end of the day, the Ravens look back at, I think a lot of this is a hoopla over nothing. You know, Deontay Johnson wasn't a fit. Like, it wasn't right. He is the malcontent that Carolina thought he was. I mean, we're talking about, he's the malcontent, a team that at the time couldn't win any games and now has a functional offense and is winning games right after Deontay Johnson left. Right.
And hey, it's not like the worst, you know, some of the worst play that the Ravens have had all season was while Deontay Johnson was here.
Right. So to me, it was just like they kind of looked around at it and they were like, you know what? We don't need him. Even if he can come back, we're going to make this work anyway. We saw it in this game, likely can step up and make big catches if they need to. There are other ways to get answers to these packages. You know, to me, it's just like a bunch of hoopla about nothing. He needed to go. They cut him.
Any prediction on where he ends up, or do you not even care?
I mean, I don't particularly care, but I think it'll be one of the like wild card ish playoff teams. Okay. There's no chance he makes it to Kansas City. I do think he'll be claimed. I think one of the playoff teams on, I guess, right. Do the claims in football work like they do in baseball where they go
reverse
through
order?
Reverse order of the other conference first, or is it all like the whole league simultaneously?
Both conferences. So it's all, and I think it might be ranked by strength of schedule to break ties, okay. Kind of the way the draft order is done.
Yeah. So I think one of the playoff ish teams will probably put a claim in on him. I'll also make the same comment about Calais Campbell. Like this whole, like, oh, Calais is going to come back and play for the Ravens when Miami cuts him. There's no chance that a Denver, an LA Chargers, any of the NFC playoff teams, like even, and in this instance, you know, I guess if the Ravens get ahead of Pittsburgh in that instance, Houston, anybody that's behind them in the claim order, in what world would they be okay with Calais Campbell getting to Baltimore because he wanted to go there? That is just, it's unreasonable.
Right. I agree. It's not reasonable and almost certainly will not happen. But then somehow the Chiefs got Terrell Suggs, and that didn't seem reasonable either. It seemed like somebody should have claimed him. So we'll see how that plays out. Let's move on to some other general things. Steelers game plan really built around getting the ball out quickly, which was interesting. Wilson moved around the pocket a lot, threw the ball out of bounds an unbelievable amount. By the way, if you look at total targets for their receivers were seven less than his total passes thrown, which means he's throwing the ball away on those other plays. And it doesn't just mean grounded at the feet of a receiver, because that goes on the receiver's record as a target. Always seemed unfair to me, but it is what it is. But he threw a bunch of balls way out of bounds, nowhere in the area. I guess nothing that was an intentional grounding specifically, but he definitely, when he throws the ball away, you know it.
Yeah, you know, they definitely were trying to get the ball out quickly. He did not have a ton of options. He doesn't have we talked about this. You know, he did some impressive things overall, I'd say, in this game, and certainly has earned whatever the next contract that he's going to get, whether it's with Pittsburgh or with somebody else. I think that Russell Wilson has a place in the NFL as being somewhere between the 15th and 22nd best quarterback, and can certainly contribute to some team somewhere in the NFL.
All right. That's a slushy zone where there are a lot of teams who at least want you as a backup and probably want you as a starter. And probably a lot of starter teams want you as a starter. Obviously, they're on the fringe of contention. I guess one of the interesting things about the last couple of games now is the Ravens have not been able to find a spot for Trenton Simpson. Now, I'm not going to sit out here and tell you that Simpson is a better player than Harrison necessarily, but I think he probably does give you a little bit more athletically at that weak side spot. And I would include coverage in that coming from his background, even if he's not there yet in terms of what he does. And I'm not even sure he doesn't give you more than Board in coverage either. It's not like Chris Board was, you know, a world beater when he was on the field on third down on his first tour with the Ravens.
So this is one of those things where I'd never understood why early in the year the Ravens didn't rotate Cleveland and Falele. Mm-hmm. The Ravens are willing to rotate certain players and give them opportunities. Obviously, it's not one guy replacing Trenton Simpson. I can't possibly understand why in certain circumstances Trenton Simpson is still not being allowed to be on the field to do something, right? And it's like, okay, we're gonna isolate you as this thing. Like if it's too much to do all the things that they were asking him to do, and they were asking him to do everything to start the year, okay, narrow the role. And it doesn't have to be only one thing, but I'm saying it could be only one thing, but maybe let's make it three or four things at the most, right? And you're either going to be an A-gap blitzer, you're going to be man-to-man against like one specific guy, or you're going to have like the short hook zone in where you are. And those are the only three call iterations that we're going to put you in. So that's enough that a team can't predict what we're going to do with you, but it's limited enough that you can show us what you're doing within the context of a team. And then once you've done that, then okay, next week we're going to add one more thing to this. And the week after that, we're going to add another thing to this. And if you can't do that thing, then we're going to go back to three or four. We're just going to stick to three or four and rotate you for the rest of that. I don't understand why the Ravens are doing that with somebody who shows enough physical talent that Trenton Simpson does.
Okay, so the evolution of the Simpson to the bench thing was Simpson not playing on third down in the dime, initially pulled off on that for Hamilton. Then they didn't have a replacement for him, and they're now a committed nickel team again because they don't have enough safeties, which is absurd that they would get to this point and not have a guy who's a decent cover guy out there on third down. Because it's not hard to find somebody out there on the street who's a better cover guy than Board or Harrison or anybody else you might think of. But Board or Harrison in particular, the two you're considering, or Simpson. Let's put it that way. But that was the first iteration. It's taking his third down responsibilities away from him. Then all of a sudden, he and Board are splitting time. And they're not splitting time in the specialist role way. They're splitting time in the complete series way, which is, that's not a, we think Board's the better pass coverage guy. We like you better on first and second down for your sideline to sideline tackle making ability, which frankly probably is Simpson's strength. But they they decided that they've all of a sudden got an open competition for this inside linebacker spot. And then we go to this third iteration where they're saying, you know, Simpson, you're just not cutting it. Harrison is our guy on early downs, even if this is very clunky in order moving him from outside linebacker to inside linebacker, which is very strange, by the way. It's like there's nobody who's the right body type for both those positions anymore. It doesn't exist in the NFL, and yet they're doing it with Harrison, and they're you know, getting some mileage out of it, playing him literally both as an outside linebacker and inside linebacker on a down-to-down basis, not a one series at a time, not, you know, the second half you're going to play outside linebacker, not because of this injury. It's they're literally moving him around down by down. And then they move Board into passing situations, or when Harrison was needed even on first down as an outside linebacker. So that usually meant base package. Outside linebackers were Harrison and Robinson. So get the best run defenders you can out there. Still have Board as an inside linebacker there. That's a place where, my God, even on base package, you can't get Simpson back on the field to replace Board. Is Board really a better linebacker? I mean, maybe. I can't definitively say no. We haven't seen enough of Simpson recently to know. But I will say Simpson had been a better tackler earlier in the season. And I'm not sure how he fell off so much with the coaches. It's also, I'll ask this as a question, does it seem like a very Ravens thing to do that a couple of guys who are, you know, journeyman NFL players, you're giving snaps over a second year high round draft pick?
Yes.
Meaning they've done it before. You have seen it happen before.
The Ravens preferring, right. Well, and especially in this instance, Board and Harrison have been around, not forever, but a long time. Board's been around forever. Harrison's been around a long time. You know, they're taking it away from, I mean, obviously, look, and I appreciate this to whatever degree you have to, of like, they trust these guys to understand collectively in the bigger picture what they need to do better than that they trust what Trenton Simpson is doing in that regard. And I appreciate that to a degree. But two of the biggest plays in this game that led to touchdowns were over Chris Board and over Malik Harrison. The Van Jefferson almost touchdown throw was because Chris Board was 6 yards away from where he was supposed to be. That window that Russell Wilson and Tom Brady was gushing over that throw, I didn't really understand. He's like, he threw it into such a tight window. I was like, he threw it with nobody around him for 8 yards. But Chris Board needs to have depth on that drop and clearly didn't, and was in no man's land and didn't seem to be looking at or doing anything in particular. I'd have to go back and watch it again with like a bit more specificity, but two of those biggest plays were attacking the areas of weak side linebacker, and that's what everybody's going to do. This was why I don't have to rant about this anymore, because I did earlier. It's what everybody's going to do to attack the Ravens from essentially playoff game out.
So to go by that throw again, okay, obviously 21-yard throw, I think it was 18 plus 3 in front of Washington, and you couldn't really tell who it was behind. And I agree, Board is the guy who would have been dropping into that. I still think that target probably goes to Washington primarily, that target responsibility based on where it was on the field. And he did a good job of basically tackling him, taking him down at the 1 yard line to do what he could. But it was only 18 plus 3, and he got down at the 1. So, you know, from the 4 yard line, it seems pretty reasonable, given that it was a 21-yard throw, that would have been Washington's responsibility. Now, I think what you're saying is that Board should have been able to drop deep enough so that he could have dragged that seam and made it a tougher, tighter window that Wilson wouldn't have wanted to throw into. I agree.
That's exactly what I'm saying. He threw it into, I mean, the reason you couldn't tell who was this underneath guy was supposed to be, if you're watching that play, I don't know if you were at the game. Maybe you were there. Were you at the game?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But if you're watching it on TV, there's nobody there. You can't see. Like I only after going back and watching it, could I tell who was supposed to be there. That void is not supposed to be that empty. And so it made it a very simple read and a very simple throw for Wilson. Yes, that is Washington's cover guy, but you have to make that a tougher throw. You have to make Wilson throw it over somebody as opposed to being able to just drop it in on a straight line like that. And that makes that a much more ultimately challenging throw for Wilson. And for all the love that I gave Russell Wilson, I think that play, the Cordell Patterson touchdown, and then the play where Owe, and this is why everybody loves to hate Adafe Owe, should have taken Wilson down on that on the first touchdown drive where Owe had him and pulled a Deontay Johnson and fell all over himself. And Wilson rolled to the outside and then throws to Skowronek on that third down.
Yeah. So that play developed initially from a pressure by Matabike, where Matabike didn't get him. Then Matabike fell down. Then Owe turned after him too. And my immediate thought on that, and it's not great that Owe fell down on the play. It is great that Owe and Matabike collectively forced Wilson left. That's usually death for a right-handed quarterback. Even a real mobile guy like Wilson is not going to throw well going to his left as a right-handed quarterback. And the fact that he was able to thread that ball into a talentless butthole like Skowronek, you know, low on that sideline, it's a low percentage 3-point shot. That's what that was.
But it's a yes, but it's a uncontested low percentage 3-point shot.
Okay.
By the time OA falls down, Wilson then has time to set. He does not worry about any pressure. And that's what I talked about this earlier, and I'm sure we'll talk about this later. But the Ravens made a big adjustment in the second half where they decided that they weren't going to let Wilson just be able to squeak out of the pocket uncontested like that and then do whatever he wanted. And once they were a little bit more contained focused on Wilson, it shut down the Steelers offense completely. And that was one of those instances where OA has to recognize that Matabike has got that pressure from the inside of that angle. And he's got to come at an angle that he is not going to be able to have a guy that's not that mobile, be able right. to run around him to the outside.
Well, the other thing is
an awareness thing for us.
However mobile Wilson is, I guarantee you OA is a lot faster. At least if we can put any stake at all in that 40 time coming out of college, I mean, he's got to be a lot faster than Wilson this point.
Because
Wilson is a 465 40 maybe now?
Maybe? I mean, probably.
Yeah. And I would think that OA would be in the mid 4.4s. I mean, I would think he'd be a guy who could get after him well. All right.
OA just like lacks a little bit of awareness in those situations, which is why he misses sacks, quite frankly. That mm-hmm. he's kind of, and it's very much the anti Bowser and Suggs, for example, where he's doing what the coach design was telling him to do exclusively. And he does that well, but he puts himself out of position for what has ultimately happened in the play. And you can't, when you're calling a play, you can't factor. You can't factor for all those things. And it feels like OA often gets himself in a really good position because what is called and is not aware enough of what's happening enough around him. And that's where it seems like they're out of his grasp just a few too many times a game.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you at all, by the way. And OA's in a little bit of a slump. Basically he's got a decent sack total for the year. His overall pressure rate, pass rush productivity is not great for the position. And that's really unfortunate. They're playing him to rest him for pass rushing situations. They are really planning to do that. And yet I don't really think he's taking advantage of it like he should be right now. So it's been frustrating. Let's move on and talk about packages a little bit. And this was an interesting game because they only used three packages the whole game. Only three. And they are limited in some ways because Kyle Hamilton can't move to other Kyle Hamilton positions in a way that you'd hope for. They played base 11 times. By the way, this is pretty good on this. The Steelers were held to 7 yards on those plays. A lot of that was Brent Urban being on the field, but it was other stuff too. It included the Pierce sack minus 10 in that group. So they've got 0.6 yards per play on those plays. They would have liked in this game to play big nickel because the Steelers certainly went at it with multiple tight ends a lot. And this is a game where you'd love to have not a committed three corner nickel, but you'd like to have the option to play a three safety nickel or big nickel. And they didn't have that. And having Hamilton as a slot corner in that kind of situation would have been something that would have really helped if you could also have Kyle Hamilton as a free safety, which is where you really need him in this current version of the Ravens defense.
Yeah, and long term, I'm okay with it also because I don't think there are a lot of teams that, especially when they get down the stretch, that they're going to need to play or be leaning more on the big nickel. I mean, just the way that the NFL has evolved, and obviously the Ravens were really good in big nickel last year. And obviously Hamilton brings a lot when he's closer to the line of scrimmage, but he's still been really effective from free safety, getting to guys within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. And so, yeah, maybe we are giving up a couple yards, but like you're getting way more back than you were giving up. And I'm way more worried about having to defend the pass in moments and big games down the stretch here, where you're going to need to defend the pass more than I'm worried about having to run the ball. I think that if the Ravens get in a situation where a team is trying to run out the clock and we're at the end of the year, we're going to see more of Pierce and Jones on the field together, like being able to, when you're in an all-in moment, do things that they know they need to do to stop the run. And so big nickel becomes less relevant.
Okay. All right. Well, that's certainly fair enough. I will say Hamilton's tackle stats are way off since he moved to free safety. He does make some splash plays. He's in the backfield some. They can still use him as a pass rusher occasionally. We saw him make finally a great center fielder play in this game, which I was very appreciative of. And he had a streak, uncharacteristically, of missed tackles in a number of games where he hadn't looked very good in that respect. But this was a good get right game for Hamilton in a lot of ways. He had a big game. I'm sure we're going to talk about that later. let's move on a little bit, talk about other packages, though. They played the standard nickel was the second package they played. And that played that 40 times. And it did have some different combinations of corners in there that they were replacing. And obviously had some different combinations of defensive linemen who were the two down in those situations. But they the three corners, obviously, they most of the time they had Humphrey in the slot. The few times that Humphrey wasn't available, they had King in the slot. And then they also had a mix of White and Stevens and Wiggins, different combinations playing on the outside.
I'm going to take back my comment earlier about Malik Harrison and Chris Board being the exclusive issue for the Ravens. Brandon okay. Stevens is also a problem. And we saw it in, he was in as the nickel guy, I think on the play that Humphrey went out and got hurt. Stevens played the nickel and they burned him almost immediately. Yeah. I'm positive.
Okay, I think it's King, but I'll look.
It was a man. It was a man crosser, and I would swear it was Stevens, but okay. Maybe I'm wrong.
So second and six, he got hurt on the RR0 where Humphrey took him down by the right sideline. Okay,
it's the play where they got the injury timeout, and Humphrey went down on one knee one. And for his eye. Yeah,
that's the one. So that was RR0.
That was King, not Stevens.
Yeah, King came in for the next two plays to replace Humphrey on third and six, and then first.
But
and 10.
King played on the didn't King play on the outside of the? I think that the crosser on the inside was Stevens because Brady was making fun of him.
I'll tell you, it still could have been, and the reason was, and I'll have to look at my notes on the play there, but it still could have been because Stevens was moved to dime on that play because it was third and six. Let me confirm.
Okay, so either way, Stevens was playing inside. Stevens was playing inside, and they got him in man, and they burned him.
Right.
And I mean, if I'm a quarterback, and I'm coming up against the Ravens defense, and I see Harrison on the field, or I see Stevens on the field, that's where the play is going. And the Ravens need to that is exactly what happened on that play. Humphrey came out. They looked at who was in the slot, and they called the route, and they went right after it. And it wasn't the only time that they went right after Stevens. And the Ravens have got to get that figured out too. I can't understand how somebody like Ben Cleveland, Wemfelele, can be terrible, can't ever get onto the field, and someone like Brandon Stevens, who is terrible, they can't get him off the field.
Right. Well, that is a strange situation with Stevens, certainly. And it's even stranger given the fact that they've tipped their hand that he's the emergency safety now. So they showed that last game when Stevens was out. They could have put King in. They could have put Braid or Kane in, but they didn't do that. They and maybe Kane wasn't actually active, but they didn't use any other option. They immediately moved Stevens to the back end where he's done it before and put him in at safety. Once you've done that, I don't know why you can't shift on an occasional basis. In fact, you could have the same players really in the game, the same six. Move Hamilton up into the slot if you wanted, the same five defensive backs. Move Hamilton up in the slot, move Stevens back, rotate around. They can do that.
Totally. And with rotate King and White, Wiggins and Humphrey, I mean, you even have King, whatever. Like if you need to, fine. But like White, and if he's healthy, again, and this kind of goes into my factor earlier of saying a week 18 rest week would have been amazing for the Ravens, I think, in that sense. But and so maybe White isn't healthy, and that's why Stevens is they're still trying to like snap count for him. But I'm gonna have an aneurysm during a playoff game.
All right, you heard Ravens. If you want to avoid Jordan's aneurysm, please.
No Stevens, no Malik Harrison in passing downs.
All right, very good. So the Ravens played eight snaps of that four corner dime. I generally like it, and I don't have the same apprehension about Stevens being on the field as a dime back in the same way. He's not typically in the weak side linebacker spot you normally see a dime back in. They usually line up 4-on-4 when the other team is usually in a kind of a normal 4-0-1-4 separated kind of receivers look on third down. They typically are lined up man for man on each of those, and they don't even really trick you into what they're planning to play on those coverages. But anyway, they do have that package available to them. It's been reasonably successful, 4.6 yards per play in this game. By the way, they gave up the most abused package was the standard nickel, where they gave up 6.8 yards per play, and that had Humphrey or King at slot corner. So anyway. We talked about some of the other things here, and I think that'll do it for right now. So we'll start off with a pass rush in the second episode. But Jordan, always great talking football with you. Tell us what's going on, where you are generally posting, and where people can contact you online.
Yeah, easiest places on Twitter, at Raven Sit Room. Talk a lot of Ravens with my buddy at Gabe Fergie there as well, trying to chime in about games and things that are happening on the regular.
We got to get you guys back on a regular show. I love having you as guests here, and you know, you're always multiple times included per year in this on this show, but also on every other series that I do during the year. You guys are always great about making time for the show. Really appreciate that. Other folks out there, if you like to be on a film study short, the perfect week is coming up after the Wednesday game. So I'll have an opportunity to record a couple of shows on your specific ideas. Hit me up with them. A lot of people have been holding back, or they're not quite ready, or this or that. Just put three bullet points together. Send it to me. We'll talk about how it can make a good show, and then we'll get together and we'll record it. It's always very easy. If you want to do something nice for the show, introduce another person to it, write us a five-star, 50-word review online. Either of those would help. Thanks very much for listening. Jordan, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? If you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. Choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.